From a transmitter atop Great Blue Hill, this is WGBH, live, local talk, Boston Public Radio.
I'm Emily Rooney. This is Boston Public Radio. Well, light on the rhetoric and heavy on to-do lists. President Obama's State of the Union address took on minimum wage, climate change, gun control. Those were at least among the big issues. So what worked? What worked? What bombed? What did he leave out? Here with me in the studio to go over last night are Michael Goldman, president of Goldman Associates, and Wendy Kaminer, a lawyer, writer, and social critic. Welcome back, you guys.
Thank you.
So I thought it was profoundly dull. I mean, just profoundly. And it the three ugliest ties in a row I've ever seen in my life.
But well, that's I like shallow, Biden's purple tie.
What?
I will stand up for Biden's purple tie.
Ugh.
Anyway. It was a typical, boring, workmanlike State of the Union. But, I'd like to address just for a minute a couple of the things that were left out. One, with all this rhetoric from Rubio and from Rand Paul about big government and Obama's, smart government initiatives, they all support one of the most destructive, most expensive, long-standing big government disasters of our history, which is the war on drugs, which was completely unmentioned. If you care about the deficit, if you care about freedom, which they all claim to do one way or another, if you care about smart government, you would tackle the war on drugs. That was one thing that struck me. The other thing that struck me was what was left out, or at least that what was unsaid, the subtext of Obama's references to foreign policy. We're getting out of Afghanistan. We're getting out of these wars. Our troops are coming home. In fact, the troops are coming home. They're just going to be sending in more and more drones. That went completely undiscussed. He made some euphemistic reference to we're still going to use our other capabilities.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was striking. I thought the president's claim that he had kept Congress fully informed about what we were doing was perhaps the biggest, most blatant lie that I have heard him say in 4 years.
You're talking about the drones?
I'm talking about the drones. I mean, mm-hmm. Not only have they refused to inform Congress about what they were doing, not only have they tried to shut down every court case that tried to find out what they were doing, they actually withheld from Congress not just information about what they were doing, at least as far as we know, they refused to tell them their interpretation of the law. They tried to keep the law secret. So those are just a few of the things that struck me.
Just to address Wendy's for a second, anytime that Dick Cheney says, I think they're doing a great job on the war on terror, I get scared. So that was a pretty kind of funny thing that's the ally. I do want to say that what the administration would say is, well, we tell the Intelligence Committee, the group of six, and they are not allowed to tell anyone else. So it becomes this big lie of well, we told the people that we had to tell, we just didn't do it. But Wendy's point is well taken. To make it sound as though the Congress, the entire Congress, or the American people for that matter, have any clue what's been going on, that's just not true.
Michael, he hasn't been giving the memos to the Intelligence Committee. There was the White House memo that was leaked last week, which was an unclassified summary of their classified memo on what they think the law is that authorizes these targeted kills, was leaked. And it was only when that was leaked that they decided to give the classified material to members of the Intelligence Committee. They're not even giving them to the Judiciary Committee.
Well, again,
they haven't even kept the Senate Intelligence Committee informed.
I agree with your point. I would argue with the specifics of what they've done. I just think there's a bigger question there, and that really is where we are as a nation right now, which is two Americas. And you could really see that played out in the speech, as you often can, but much more so, Emily, in this speech. You had the president talking about, raising the minimum wage, which is one of the things that the Republicans hate the most, the idea that you're going to force small businesses to pay a livable wage to people and cut their profit. You talked about the gun bill, which bringing the people who were victims of guns, which, basically flies in the face of everything they believe. It seemed to me what made this speech more interesting than anything is there were very few places, really, where there was where he sought to find a common ground. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was the most interesting thing. It was almost as though he said, you know, I've been here for 5 years, to hell with it. I'm going to just fight the fights, win, lose, or draw, but we're not going to pretend as though we can get along when we can't.
Well, I think that the last 4 years have shown us that even if there is common ground, there is a strong faction in the Republican Party that's not going to allow it to be acted upon. So
what did you think of the way Boehner was responding? I mean, I guess the opposition party always does that. But it just strikes me so awkward that, you know.
It is. And I would argue it was worse than most, which is why you noticed it. I do think that it when we look at the numbers, it'll find it had incredibly low numbers.
The numbers are already out.
Yeah. Oh, I did not know that. Yeah. It struck me 10 minutes in that if I wasn't coming on and doing the show, I'd be turning the station. And I care. So if I was doing that, I can't imagine what real people were doing. But going to the whole idea of one other issue, which is there, which is the immigration issue. Again, the idea of immigration as a way of expanding the universe of the workforce versus the idea of punishment for the people. I mean, they come at these issues now from two such different points. I feel frustrated that I can never see in these issues any place where they could get to even a modern
really
middle point.
I think if he had said anything along the lines is, as Republicans have suggested, we could try, you know, but no reaching, nothing like that.
Well, he did that on cap and trade. When he started to talk about climate change, and he referenced a proposal, a bipartisan proposal from John McCain and Joe Lieberman, which I think was essentially cap and trade. And then, of course, the camera, went to John McCain looking as sour as he usually looks. But, you know, the other thing that was interesting, though, is that if a Democratic president had given this speech 10 or 15 years ago, it would not have been seen as some aggressive liberal staking out of ground. It would have been seen as an attempt to find middle ground. Even the government initiatives that he was talking about, they tended to be private-public partnerships. When his fix-it-now thing, let's put people to work rebuilding our crumbling bridges, he was talking about doing that as a public-private partnership. And there were a couple of other instances like that.
I would have.
He was also, by the way, talking about increased means testing in Medicare, which is hardly a far-left proposition. He referenced modest reforms in Medicare. You know, if you took it out of the context of today's politics, which I know is a difficult and maybe futile thing to do, it was actually a pretty moderate approach, it would have passed for bipartisan. Maybe
but that
just
goes to show how far to the right the Republicans have gone.
Exactly.
That there are two points I want to make. Number one is that he went in there knowing that 52% of the people in a public policy poll before the speech said that they, quote, agreed with the broad agenda, Obama's agenda. 55% of people in that same poll said they disagreed with the Republican agenda, not even knowing what it was. The second point is, were I to have had this speech, and I would have had this opportunity, and I know it's a State of the Union speech, and you've got to start with certain kinds of basic questions answered in the speech. 99% of the people in this country, and probably 50% of the listeners to your show, don't know what sequestration even means.
Right. Well, I bet the listeners to this show do.
Well, you know, about half of them do. Because this morning before I came, I was asking people who I thought were pretty smart, and they were totally confused as to what it meant. And, you know, what do you mean by that? And what can get cut and not get cut? I would have thought that they would have polled us and said, this is a great opportunity for us to skewer the battleground of public opinion 100% on our side by explaining sequestration through the eyes of the president and the administration. They didn't even try. We're coming up to a massive...
Well, this was not the moment to be explaining sequestration.
You know, I'm not sure, Emily. I'm not sure that Michael's not right. If instead of giving us this laundry list, which put a lot of people to sleep, he had just focused on the sequestration, it's a hard enough word to say, and explained in lay terms, if he had taken 5 to 10 minutes to explain in lay terms what that meant, what the cuts were going to mean, what he had proposed. I think that could have been very effective.
That's what we'd be talking. That's what everybody would be talking about this morning is, gee, did the president tell the whole story? Is it part of parts of it? It's an idea. Does it really make sense? Should we be thinking about this?
But these things are always laundry lists. They have to touch on everything.
But that's how you make history.
That they have
they
to
just
do it.
They just do it. That's what it always is.
But he's the president.
I know.
He can
and
do whatever
also,
he wants.
It's his speech.
Right. It's his speech.
And there's no political repercussions for this. I mean, he could have done it, but they don't. And they always start it with the exact same phrase, the state of our union is strong, even if it isn't.
Right.
You know? What president was honest about the state of our union?
Well, that was the other thing that really depressed me about this speech is that there was so much about it that was so at odds with the reality of where the country is now. Whether you're talking about the state of our union being strong now, whether you're going through a laundry list of things that's never going to happen, whether you're saying things like our troops fight for freedom, our troops have kept us free, these wars have made us less free than we have been certainly in my lifetime because the whole security surveillance state is part of this war. But there was so much in the speech that was so at odds with the reality of where we are. And I would say the same thing about Rand Paul's response and Marco Rubio's response.
Well, I just want to make one last point, and hopefully we'll be done with this particular thing. But the idea that you can't cut your way to prosperity.
Cut your way?
Islam, you can't cut your way to prosperity. There has to be some
expenditure. Maybe you can.
History shows you can't. The truth is, however, you can spend your way to a better economic place. I wish he had added the line that said making drastic cuts doesn't grow the economy, but making expenditures that make it likely that small business and big business is going to hire and grow, and you can help them using the government money to do that. People don't like to hear that, but we're in a situation right now economically where these guys are sitting on literally more money in their bank accounts than some countries have. And they're refusing to do the basic hiring or buying a desk or buying a computer. They're so terrified. I mean, if we could have done something to say to these people, open up your wallets or we're going to penalize you in some way because you can't continue to do what you're doing, which is ask people to work three times as hard for half the dough, which is what we've been doing since this thing started in 2009.
Talking to Michael Goldman, president of Goldman Associates, and Wendy Kaminer, lawyer, writer, and social critic. We're talking about the State of the Union address. What did you all think of the bring your own victim strategy? Everybody had a victim there representing them. All the congressmen, Michelle Obama had the parents of that 15-year-old girl who was shot dead in the middle of a gang crossfire.
If we're going to blame someone for that, let's blame Ronald Reagan because he started it. As I recall,
it was clever the first time.
But it was always such a blatant appeal to sort of the lowest common denominator of sentimentality. And I say that without wanting to in any way disrespect any of the people who were brought in or disregard any of their tragedies or any of their achievements. But, they've been doing it every year now since Reagan started it.
I have a slightly different cut on that particular issue. And I really thought I knew a lot about the issue of guns. I've been having clients going back to the Brady Bill talk about gun and gun control and what we needed to do. Now the new sensible gun control is the word that they use. I heard about a month ago on PBS, Mark Shields, doing his Shields and Brook thing, used a statistic that absolutely dropped me from my chair. The number of people killed in every war that America has ever had, from 1775 in Concord through today, we've lost approximately 1.8 million people at war. I'm sorry, 680,000 people have died in all of our wars combined.
That can't be true because there were 600,000 in the Civil War alone.
That can't be true.
This is according to Mark.
No, he's wrong.
Wait a minute. You must have his number wrong. 600,000 people died in the Civil War. So he may have said, with all the wars combined, not as many people died. Has died in the Civil War. The other wars we've ever been involved in.
I think his point is that more people are dying.
One point,
from,
right. What he said is that from 1968 to today, which is 45 years since the death of Bobby Kennedy, which is what he was using as the demarcation, twice as many people have been killed by some gun, which is murder, suicide, accident, than died in all the wars since the beginning of time. So one-fifth of the people for...
I don't know if I believe that.
Yeah, you know, Michael, I bet you could say the same thing about death from automobile accidents.
No, I don't know. And also, did you know that the suicide versus shooting versus shoot 'em dead rate is 2 to 1, more twice as many people kill themselves.
It was about gun death and the prevalence of guns in America in our lifetime from 68 forward before
1968.
That time. That's the line he was drawing. He was basically saying, again, it's what the big point here is
that I believe
I didn't. It stunned me that I could not be aware that this number of people died from guns. Again, it's not all murder and it's not all robbery. It is suicide. It is access to guns.
I'm not surprised because we've had for many, many years an epidemic of handgun violence that we don't generally hear
about. But you know about that, Wendy. The fact that I wasn't aware
I'm totally tuned into the
numbers.
Yeah.
And I think that what the attempt was, whether they achieved it or not, was to say this is not about a single person being killed in Chicago. This isn't about three people being killed in a theater or 20 people being killed in a classroom. This is about a massive epidemic that we have that we need to start to look at as we would if people were dying of disease.
Okay, going back to Wendy's issue, if they would eliminate that war on drugs, you know,
that's
this might end it completely because that's where the murders are taking place and that's the issue that people are killing
each other
and
that
over.
Finances a lot of the weaponry, yeah.
You know,
I'm sure.
I was with Baltimore
you know,
Mayor
Kirk Short
going back that far. I mean, he you know, back in the 1970s, he was talking about that. Baltimore
Ago, back in the 1990s, I was having a conversation with David Kennedy, who was one of the architects of the Boston Gun Project. He's now he's a very prominent criminologist. He's now at John Jay in New York, and he was then doing his research on handguns and I think guns and youth. And he said one of the things that really struck him was that when you talked to police about what they did when they apprehended a juvenile with the gun, they were not asking the kids where they got the guns. I mean, there were simple things like this, not trying to find out where the kids were getting the guns, not going after the illegal gun markets. You know, that could accomplish a lot more than something like the assault weapons ban that was passed in the 1990s that I think probably did very little, that had so many exceptions built into it that it was probably bound to fail.
If you got rid of all the people who were there for drug offenses caused by their own addiction, you cleaned out the prisons and then were able to put people in. You know, it's very interesting. If you get caught with 20 pounds of heroin in the Grand Caymans, you can get a 10-year prison sentence. If you get caught with one single handgun, you get a 20-year sentence. They don't have a gun problem because they treat guns more seriously than
they also don't have a Second Amendment. So you can fantasize about, you know, passing laws to take guns away or impose a 20-year sentence on somebody for having a gun. You know, you'd better move to the Cayman Islands because it's never going
to
happen
here. For more
reasons
than one. All right. Wendy Kaminer, Michael Goldman, thanks so much for being here today to talk about the State of the Union.
Always a pleasure.
See you guys
next week,
maybe. All right, we've been talking about the State of the Union, and coming up, we're going to be talking about something that's maybe a little greasier, a little more fun. Whitey Bulger, the never-ending topic here in Boston. Boston Globe reporters Kevin Cullen, Shelley Murphy have a new book, and Whitey happens to be in court this afternoon, so it'll be a good discussion. Wendy looks surprised, but I don't know what it is. It's some motion or something. All right, you're listening to Boston Public Radio. I'm Emily Rooney on 89.7 WGBH.